The end of the Hundred Years' War did not bring Europe into peace so much as it pushed the continent into a new and uncertain age. By the middle of the 15th century, the great medieval struggle between England and France had exhausted armies, treasuries, noble families, villages, and entire regions. For more than a century, war had shaped political life, economic survival, royal identity, and the imagination of ordinary people. When the last English strongholds in France were lost, except for Calais, Europe did not simply return to the world that had existed before the conflict. That world was gone. The war had changed kingdoms from the inside, weakened older feudal habits, strengthened royal governments, altered military methods, and left deep scars in the countryside. The Middle Ages were not yet over, but after the Hundred Years' War, Europe no longer looked or felt quite medieval in the old sense. For France, the end of the war was both a deliverance and a beginning. The kingdom had survived invasion, civil war, famine, plague, foreign occupation, and the humiliation of seeing large portions of its territory controlled by the English crown. During its darkest moments, especially after the Treaty of Troyes in 1420, France had seemed almost politically dead. The treaty had attempted to disinherit the Dauphin Charles and recognize Henry V of England and his heirs as successors to the French throne. Yet that arrangement, which appeared devastating on paper, failed in practice because kingdoms were not held together by legal documents alone. Loyalty, memory, religion, geography, local interest, and royal symbolism mattered. The cause of Charles VII survived because many French people could not accept a foreign king as the natural ruler of France, and because the French monarchy still possessed a sacred aura that could be wounded but not easily destroyed. The recovery of France under Charles VII marked one of the most important political transformations of late medieval Europe. At the beginning of his reign, Charles VII had been mocked by enemies as the King of Bourges, a ruler with limited territory and uncertain authority. By the end of the war, he had become the king who restored the realm. His achievement did not come only through battlefield victories. It came through administration, taxation, military reform, diplomacy, and patience. The French crown learned from catastrophe. It recognized that feudal levies and temporary noble armies were no longer enough to defend the kingdom in an age of prolonged conflict. The monarchy needed more reliable soldiers, better command structures, stronger finances, and a clearer chain of authority. Out of this need emerged a more centralized royal state. One of the clearest signs of this transformation was the growth of permanent taxation. In earlier medieval politics, kings often had to negotiate heavily with nobles, towns, and representative assemblies to obtain extraordinary funds for war. But the pressures of the Hundred Years' War allowed the French crown to justify regular taxation as a matter of national survival. The taille, a direct tax, became one of the financial foundations of royal power. This was not simply a technical change. It shifted the relationship between ruler and subject. The king was no longer merely a feudal lord among other lords, relying on personal obligation and aristocratic service. He was increasingly the head of a kingdom-wide administrative machine capable of drawing resources from the population on a recurring basis. Many people resented this, of course, but the monarchy had learned that power depended on money as much as lineage. Military reform was equally significant. The French monarchy developed companies of professional cavalry known as Companies d'Ordnance, supported by royal taxation and placed under more direct royal control. Alongside them stood infantry forces, artillery specialists, and administrative officials who could organize campaigns more effectively than the loose feudal hosts of earlier centuries.